Live Wild's Connection Matters podcast, bringing together heart-centered, nature-connected, curious people who share the inquiry, how can we create a connected and meaningful way of living that brings more health, happiness and growth to our world? My name is Leona Johnson and I am your host. Hello, beautiful humans. Welcome to Connection Matters podcast. This is episode 8. I hope you're well. I am grateful today because I've had the chance to spend special time, one-to-one time, we call it special time, with my daughter last night and my son the night before. So I feel really grounded and really connected and really happy for them and for me that we've been able to do that. It's really rare that we get special one-on-one time. So yeah, that feels good. Today's episode is with Rebecca Card, and to give you a little bit of background on Rebecca, she works as a guide, facilitator and ceremonialist of nature-based wisdom, cultural healing and soul initiation. She is a wilderness rites of passage guide and cultural mentor, supporting people to remember wholeness as part of the collective initiation she believes is needed at this time and as part of the journey towards knowing our belonging to the earth and the earth community. The conversation that we have is about grief, death, community, wholeness and celebration. And it's not morbid. We talk about this during the podcast, how sometimes people can see grief and see death as being very bleak and depressing, but actually to me it feels very enlivening and vital that we're having these conversations at this time. So I'm really glad that we got to speak about this. We start talking about two specific things that I just wanted to be a little bit more clearer about before you go into the actual conversation. One is the art of mentoring, which is a specific model for holding connective and transformational spaces. And this model has been used to hold camps all around the world over the last 10 or 20 years. So this is the camp that we're talking about. We do say that a little bit, but I think it's really good to go into knowing that that's what it's about. Also, we talk about grief ceremonies. So if you've not been to a grief ceremony, you don't know what a grief ceremony is. These are places where people intentionally create and participate in holding space for difficult feelings, individually or in groups. And they are in many traditional cultures and connected cultures around the world. They have always held grief ceremonies, grief tending spaces, but we don't have it so much in our culture. So I just wanted to make that clear. And the specific grief ceremony that we're talking about that happened at the Art of Mentoring camp that both Rebecca and I were at. Well, there is a grief ceremony that comes from the Dagara people of Burkina Faso in West Africa. Some of you might know the work of Sabon Fusome. She's someone who made her life's work and life's mission to share the ancient wisdom of her ancestors, of the Dagara people. And this is where the inspiration behind the grief ceremony that we attended at the Art of Mentoring came from. So it's not that ceremony, but it's similar to and has roots and connections to the Dagara grief ceremony, as in it's held in a space that has a central focal point. The times I've done it, it's always been in a huge marquee. The central focal point, which is a bowl of water that people who are at the ceremony pour their grief into. They go to the front of the room and they offer their grief, whether that's spoken, whether that's with tears, whether that's with dance, whether that's with movement, with shouting, or, you know, all sorts of noise. And it's all done alongside the drumming and chanting and sometimes singing, and often with numbers between, I would say, 20 and 200. I'm sure there have been larger ones. The one that we attended in August in 2019 at the Art of Mentoring was, I would say, around 100 people, but I'm not totally sure about that. But just to give you an idea of what that space looked and felt like, there was, you know, a number of people in a big marquee with a central focus at the front, dancing, drumming, moving to the sound, and then when they felt moved, moving to the front of the room and offering their grief in service to life to try and shift it, move it and release. And it's a very powerful thing to witness and be part of. And it's very difficult actually to be there and not be moved, because obviously you're seeing that grief in other people being released. And yeah, very powerful, very lovely, and something I never thought I would be part of, and something I never thought that would actually work. But actually, you know, when you drop your inhibitions about being seen and various things and just go for it, and use that as an opportunity to release, it's very powerful. And I wonder how different it would be if we were doing those regularly, because how it comes in the times that I've been part of these ceremonies is very forcefully, very dramatically, very full on, very very emotionally. And I think it's because when we are given the opportunity to release, we do, but there's a lot there. Whereas if it was something that happened on a monthly basis in our communities, then maybe there wouldn't be so much pent up, held, stuck, unexpressed, difficult emotions. So yeah, I just wanted to clear that up, or just to give a little bit more insight into it, because we didn't specifically describe that when we were talking. Now, there's another quick correction that I want to make, which is when I was talking about another grief ceremony called a sacred fire. And that's a ceremony where when someone dies, in some cultures, there's something called a sacred fire, which is where people can hold a fire for someone for 4 days and four nights, and the community can go and be part of releasing their grief and sharing and feel surrounded by friends and family who knew the person who died and support the spirit of the person to move on. And I said it was a tradition from the Lakota, which is a Native American tribe. But actually, I was working and learning about the Lakota tribe at the time whenever I learned about the sacred fire. But the sacred fire is actually of the Odawa lineage of the Anishinaabe people. So just wanted to be clear about that, because I think it's really important to know where things come from, even if they're slightly different and maybe inspired by rather than being those specific ceremonies. And that obviously happens a lot now, because we've lost so many of our traditional cultural ceremonies, and we're having to really tune into ourselves and to the land and listen to what is needed. And there are some cultures that manage to hold their ceremonies who are also wanting to support people in finding connection, and this is where knowing about traditional cultural wisdom is really useful. So I also wanted to say about Rebecca that she is a fantastic and amazing poet, and I've witnessed her reading her poetry in the past, and it's profoundly moving. And I listened to this quote the other day which just made me think, I've really got to read this here. So this quote comes from Joseph Brodsky, who was a United States poet laureate. And, well, it speaks for itself. By failing to read or listen to poets, society dooms itself to inferior modes of articulation, those of the politician, the salesman, or the charlatan. In other words, it forfeits its own evolutionary potential. For what distinguishes us from the rest of the animal kingdom is precisely the gift of speech. Poetry is not a form of entertainment, and in a certain sense not even a form of art, but it is our anthropological genetic goal, our evolutionary linguistic beacon. I heard that and I was just like, yes, I'm not a poet myself. I don't even read that much poetry, but when I do, it really blows me away. So Rebecca offered so generously, after we spoke, four of her poems to our Patreon supporters. So anybody who doesn't know, Patreon is a way that you can support this podcast for as little as £3 a month and get in return lots of freebies and giveaways and behind the scenes content from me as a thank you for your support. And that's the only way that this podcast is going to be able to continue, is with support from people who support and like what we do. And so I thought I would read one of her poems because they're just so lovely. And you can know that this one and three of her other poems, which are equally as beautiful, are also in the Patreon, which is www.patreon.com/connectionmatterspodcast. If you would like to go there, it's also in our show notes. So the poem is like this. I want to walk into the next life with my hands free, carrying nothing extra, like this. I want to walk through those realms without the weight of ancestral grief on my back, the knots of fear from being abandoned in my belly, or the ache of sadness from feeling alone in my heart. I want this soul to go on, unburdened, unmasked, disarmed, healed. I want to be brave enough to write the next line of this poem. I want to be able to look at the transparent souls of my grandchildren and smile, because I know I did my very best, like this. Ah, I love it, and I loved speaking to Rebecca, and I hope that you enjoy the podcast too. Don't forget that if you're not already, please subscribe to the podcast and do share it with anybody who you think would be interested, because we're a new podcast and word of mouth really helps at the moment. And also if you can rate it and leave a review on Apple Podcasts, the link will also be in the show notes. That also makes a big difference to how people get to hear the podcast. So yeah, without further ado, this is Rebecca Card. Hi Rebecca.
Hi Leona.
Thank you so much for joining me here for Connection Matters. When I imagined this podcast, you were definitely one of the people, one of the first people that I was thinking of for speaking to, because I have been aware of the work that you've been doing for quite a long time. And then we actually got to meet properly last summer at the Art of Mentoring in Scotland, which was absolutely amazing for me, totally blew my mind. It wasn't the first I've been to, but in terms of all of the ingredients of what makes a really beautiful, connected, whole community space, it had it, didn't it?
Yeah. I don't know, just as you're saying that, I'm like, hey, that's a great place to start for a conversation.
Yeah.
I mean, actually it is, because it so many strands and circles within circles of that whole event, that whole village that we created, co-created for that week, held so many cultural healing pieces. Like, and there was something, you know, you've probably been to you have been to Art of Mentorings before, and so have I, but there was something about that week in that place with that particular constellation of people that I know that, well, I myself, many of the staff and many, many of the participants like yourself came away really filled up. And it's, you know, even now with that thread, kind of being reminded of that thread, and like, you know, over the last 2 or 3 months I've had conversations with people who were there who've expressed a really similar thing, and hearing people's stories, actually their stories of what it was like for them to be at the final closing circle, or what it was like for them to be at that grief ceremony, and to hear their stories, it's so amazing to me, that it's such a reminder for me that it takes everybody's unique way of showing up in the world to make the world, to make a village, to be the village. It's like every single person in that, you know, that's like micro, obviously, of what could potentially be the macro.
Mm-hmm.
So we're all there remembering what it might have been like or what it could be like, you know, in service to the whole. That's my experience of it. That's mm-hmm. one way of putting it.
Mm-hmm.
And that within that, every single soul there is unique, you know, and so therefore we're all experiencing our unique personal versions of that event,
mm-hmm.
and of the events within the event, mm-hmm. you know, and like to hear that someone called in the ancestors in a very particular way as they were coming into the grief ceremony helped me to understand at least part of why the ceremony itself was how it was, right? Mm-hmm. And I was, of course, the main holder of that ceremony. So that's really helpful for me. I'm like, if I could sit and just spend a year catching everyone's stories at that event, you know, the whole week, actually.
Yeah.
Would be amazing.
Yeah.
I'm sitting here now curious about your own experience of that week and your own, I don't know whether that's relevant now, but that's definitely perked.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We could go into that. I mean, so for anyone who doesn't know what the art of mentoring is, I guess it's worth saying at this point that the art of mentoring is a camp. It comes from the Eight Shields Network, that is an organization that was originally started by a man called John Young, who is a renowned nature connector and much more. And this camp is... I always stumble on how to explain it. It's a camp of people who come together to hold a space that is intended to have all of the elements of a whole and healthy community.
Mm-hmm.
And this comes from a model called the Eight Shields that has been devised by John Young. And that came from his work where he'd gathered information from many different cultures and all the similarities of what makes a good and healthy way of living and what makes a whole way of living. Do you think that's fair to say?
Yeah, definitely. Observations of earth-based people where he was noticing mm-hmm. connection happening. And so then he began to piece together what were the practices or the things that they were doing that they had in common
mm-hmm.
that were connective.
Mm-hmm.
And then from that, he, along with mostly Ingwe, who originally English but grew up in Kenya, and they, over the course of many years, pieced together this model based on the directions of the compass. Not just four, but eight.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know how far we want to go. We could just keep borrowing,
yeah.
Can we?
So, well, I guess at this point, I usually like to begin with gratitude. And so I'm going to share my gratitude right now for the impact that this model and my experiences of being with people and at places where this model has been used, how much that has impacted my life and the way I see the world, and how unbelievably grateful I am to have a more balanced view, a way, I guess it's like a map, something to go back to look at, well, that didn't go so well, why didn't it go so well? Or because we didn't tend to the young, or we didn't welcome people properly, so it was didn't have a proper beginning, or you know, there was nobody who was holding space for the things that went wrong and for grief, or for the difficult things, and so there was no one there to pick that person up whenever it didn't go right. You know, these are the kind of things that I've experienced from knowing that there is a model, and yet and having worked with it for quite a few years now and held spaces that have used the model, have seen the impact that it has on people whenever you hold a connective space that considers all of these things. So yeah, really grateful to Laura McNally, who's my friend who sadly died nearly 2 years ago. But she introduced me to the Eight Shields and did it in such a brilliant way. She was just full of life and embodied, I think, the lessons that she'd gained from working with the Eight Shields. So yeah, grateful to Laura, grateful to John Young, who just works tirelessly to bring connection and beauty and cultural repair to the world. And yeah, and to all of those who contribute and who work with it and bring it in the work that they do, which is including you, Rebecca.
Thank you. Yeah, I want to totally echo that gratitude, and I'm grateful that you named all of those things. It feels very there's a richness to feeling that in my being. And as well as everything that you've just named as your gratitude, that I'm twos up on. I'm also grateful that there is a robin, female robin, sitting on a nest just down there in our little shed. So we're living on Dartmoor in a granite walled building, and so we got a shed just coming off the front, and she's just inside the door, and we just couldn't work out for weeks and weeks. We've sometimes seen robins going in, but I have to say I'm absolutely in awe of their stealth. Like, after all that, like, it went completely quiet. Oh no, they've gone, they're not going to use that, you know. But she's in there. She's there. We can hardly see her, even though she's just inside the door. And I like the electricity that goes through my body when I think about baby robins being born there, and the relationship that we can build, the ropes of connection that we can build. You know, there's a part of me that's probably completely like, oh, I just want you to be mine. so I have to just watch that part of me, but I'm grateful that she's there and that she feels safe enough to be there. Yeah, so just with that preciousness,
so magical to be able to witness that.
I know.
Okay. Yeah. So yeah, the art of mentoring and how that was. So I went this time without my children, and I love the idea of being there with my children, because obviously I love them to experience that, you know, a camp where there's elder circles and there's teenager circles and there's, you know, children and there's babies and mothers and there's all of the singing and the games and the playfulness of the people who are involved with the art of mentoring. Everybody just seems to be really in touch with their inner child and have that, you know, that vitality, and as well as the depth that comes from the programs and the teaching and then the work with grief. And I think this year it was in August in 2019, I went without the children because I felt like I really wanted to expose myself fully as an adult to all that it has to experience. And I knew I was doing the newest program, and which was called, what was it called? Nature Culture. Yeah, so it's slightly different to the programs that have been before. Yeah, and I just all of it just filled me up because, you know, there were people who were having tricky times, but there was people just picking them up, you know, the elders' circles in the morning and the elders who were just around being able to be there to sort of support people and watch who's having a tricky time, who can I help? Just witnessing that was beautiful. Having the fire that was a place where people could go to with any grief that they were holding. I really had such a beautiful, powerful time there. And I've done sacred fires before that have been in the tradition of the Lakota, and this was similar but different to that. What a powerful space, and what a great, even though I didn't go there that much, the times I did go there, I went alone or at night, and just felt so safe, and just felt so safe knowing it was there even when I didn't go. And that just felt really important.
Right.
And then obviously we did this huge grief tending ceremony, which is just, I don't know what's the word, epic. Just like so, you know, people who, I guess many of them whom will have never been to anything like that before. And yeah, that was a really special thing to be part of. And I have been part of those ceremonies before, but yeah, it felt really, really rich and strong. I wonder if you'd be up for explaining a little bit about what that was and where it comes from and how it was for you.
Yeah. What was that? I'm still trying to work out what was that. It was a space for anyone there who felt the need to be held in community, in the village, as part of the village, and in service to the village, in service to life. That's how I see grief work. To come and be held in that space in order to be witnessed and be supported for anything that feels remotely connected to grief to move, and that grief is whatever needs to move. And of course, you know, my understanding, experience of grief is that it shows up in so many different ways. And that culturally, well, the culture I come from, let's call it the dominant culture, that isn't so connected with the natural cycles, with nature, with emotions, with allowing emotions. So many things that we have distanced ourselves from, and are that, you know, that there's a kind of phobia of. There's even, you know, probably there's even a phobia of nature in many people. There's a phobia of showing emotions, and in particular sadness, sorrow, grief. The phobia of death. I'm bringing that in because that feels really relevant at the moment to me in my life, and also globally. And so... how do we support each other, support ourselves to close that gap, even just a little bit, you know, where there's a gap has been created. So it was a space, the spaces I hold for grief are a space that just allows whatever is ready to move. And it, you know, you've got to bear in mind that that particular ceremony was happening 4 days in to a week-long process where certainly quite early on in that week-long process, the volume, the heat had been turned up quite strongly. And so we were already together, already in this, it felt like a very strong container, strong in as much as it's strong and safe that stuff can start to unravel and move. Yeah, well, that's what I mean by strong, and that some of that stuff might be strong within that because people feel safe enough. That's my experience of these spaces. And so that particular ceremony was happening 4 days into that process. And by that point, you know, people individually and as a village, let's call it a village, have already deepened quite a lot. And there's been, you know, my memory is that there was a lot of grief coming up for people. For many different reasons. I mean, there was a lot of conversation around ancestors, witch hunts, a colonization, not just here, but in, you know, as you know, Sulistu coming over from the northwest coast of the States with his stories of his people being colonized. And then, you know, where, you know, it's that thing of where does it begin? Where does it end? And everyone feels displaced and everyone feels orphaned and everyone feels the grief of that. And here we are, you know, talking about it and telling stories to each other about it. So then there's a grief ceremony and everyone was primed. It felt like everyone was like, yep, not everyone. I mean, not everyone in the village went. Of course, the children didn't go. There were people supporting the children. There were people staying at the hearth to support the adults and whoever wasn't going to this ceremony itself. And yeah, I mean, there was something about the energy of it, and I probably will never really know or understand cognitively what was going on there, but there was some, let's say, some hefty old stuff that I felt was being moved and being cleared, and many of us showed up in really strong ways in order for that to happen. I've kind of forgotten your question now. I can feel myself going, what was that? That was so, like you say, epic.
I think, so for me, what's so interesting is when you ask people about grief, or I don't know, when I speak to people about a grief ceremony, and even when I thought about going to a grief ceremony, and I'm quite open to a lot of things, the idea of crying in front of other people and or being in a room with other people who were doing that just felt so alien and so outrageous to imagine that it would actually happen. And from having experienced it now in various guises in different places and times, what I see is that given permission, given the right container, given all of those, when it's done well, let's say, when people who are holding those spaces are considering what's gone before and what's going to come after and all of the things that need to be done, people need and want to express all of the complex emotions that we feel for what's going on in the world right now and what has gone on in the past and what is coming in the future. And Yeah, and what I witnessed in that space was like a really ripe plum that you just sort of have to poke with a little needle or something, and it just bursts because it be, and that's really where we're at as a species, as humanity, aren't we? We're holding a lot of difficult emotions because of the way that we live.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it goes back to, I mean, a lot of it goes back to the displacement and the colonization story and the trauma that many of us are holding from our ancestral lineages because of that. And it's still going on, you know, and you and I here and now are just talking about the macro, the cultural trauma, the cultural grief. But then, you know, within that ceremony, we're just talking about that ceremony, of course there are many ceremonies, but within that ceremony, there'll be the individual, personal, someone's just died, my 20-year relationship's just ended. You know, you could go through like a whole range of reasons why, you know, aside from, you know, the climate, the state, the ecological crisis. It's like, where do you start? Where does it end? And yeah, I think we're even just the fact that we're able now, many of us, to have these conversations is a stepping stone to addressing that trauma and therefore that grief that is ours and isn't ours, you know? But yeah, the potential damage, if you like, of not doing the grief work. I mean, we've seen it. It's a perpetual cycle for hundreds, if not thousands of years. You know, there's the trauma. God's, you know, many of our world leaders, ancestors were displaced, and now they're colonizing other peoples and other people's land. And it perpetuates because the trauma and the grief have not been processed. And then it's a transference thing happening because it's all just going on in them. So they're giving it out to the world. And so that is, like, that mess is at least partly why I stepped forward and started offering the ceremonies, because I have my own huge grief for like the lack of many things in my life because of the culture I've been brought into. You know, where are my elders? Like that grief. You know, I haven't got anyone to turn to at this time, and I'm approaching my menopause. Where are my elders? You know, that is, it's all, you know, it's still there. And then, why aren't I being welcomed in this space? People aren't welcoming me. Ouch. Like, you know, now I need to like parent myself and take care of myself. And that's okay. I can do that because I've learned to do that. But really, wouldn't it be great if culturally we just knew how to welcome each other and we knew how to, really meet each other. Mm.
Yeah, absolutely. And it feels like you say, apart from the grief of the people who are suffering right now directly because of COVID-19, there's also a lot of other things that are becoming apparent about the way we live, how fast life is, how all of the expectations that are on us that keep us away from spending all the time we want with our children, like, you know, the amount of domestic abuse that goes on in people's homes. We know that from the number of deaths that have occurred now, that have doubled from domestic violence in this time, and all of the many other, I mean, yeah, we could list them, but there's so many things that are becoming apparent about the way we live and how we live. And but you know what's spoken to me the most in some ways is all of the how quickly people, many people have returned to certain things, which shows you what people were always craving, you know, community, local community, and growing food and being out more with families. You know, I've seen so many families walking together or cycling together, and you know, just the simple things of life that, you know, without downplaying the struggles that people are having, you know, that people are embracing and having the opportunity to do.
Yeah, I think that thing about simplicity, and because, you know, if nothing else, this few months has brought us kind of to a much more simplified version of life, because we can't do so many things that we usually do. And I'm so curious how it's going to unfold. Are people going to choose to go back to, you know, like I heard about a level of level one lockdown coming out of, you know, New Zealand, and, you know, the McDonald's story. There's just like loads and a whole queue of cars in the drive-through at McDonald's. And it's like, really? Is that the best you could do after all that? That's the thing that you go back to. You know, if I'd been there, I'd have been like holding a grief ceremony right in the middle of the road. I'd been like, no!
It's going to be interesting. And I do think what it's given us is the opportunity to discuss the real need for tending to our grief in a way that we haven't really heard before, because and really it's this thing around isolation, loneliness, and our elders and the way that they're living and being forced to live, and all of the people who are in care homes, and the need for connection that people have really noticed that they need, and then the realization of how many people live without daily human connection anyway. You know, there's a lot that's come out of this that I think is real juice for having conversations, having important conversations. One of my musings is, what would a culture that tends to its grief well look like? In the world as we know it, there's many things that I just can't imagine. I guess, you know, one of the griefs about going to a place like the Art of Mentoring camp is that you have to leave it, because it's not like that in the rest of the world. And there are other camps, I guess, that people feel that same thing, you know, forest school camps and other such places that have been created as a bubble, as a sort of ideological space of what culture, what a community could look like. And then we come back into the world where some, but not all of those things are there, and a lot aren't. How do we shift from the world that we know into the world that where we attend to grief well?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I mean, I think there's something about I'm coming up with a very familiar Gandhi quote: "Be the change." Be the change that you wish to see in the world. You know, it's that for me, again and again and again, rather than you know, it's the likes of you and I seeing the value of it, being okay with our own grief, tending our own grief, and then just showing up in the world from that place. So people know, oh, she's okay with her grief, and she's okay with my grief, if I'm willing to, you know, let her see it. And so something about... the role modeling and the being of that, and being willing to talk about it and being there for people when they're in it. And also inviting people into spaces where they can explore that for themselves. And I think, you know, there's a lot of shame in grief, about grief. There's a lot of shame. It doesn't mean that people don't grieve necessarily. Sometimes, of course, that it does mean that. But a lot of times people are grieving, but behind closed doors, and they don't want other people. It's like it's a patterned, it's a conditioned thing. which I was very familiar with until I started going to grief ceremonies. For any of us who are tending our own grief and see the value of tending grief, we just have to keep showing up from that place, from that authentic. And I think when one is in touch with one's grief, there's a lot of love. I think there's a lot of love and there's a lot of heart in there. And generally people warm to that, you know?
And so I guess what I witness is many people fearing stepping into grief because they worry about not being able to close it up again, you know, and not being able to, but like you say, there's the shame and then there's the fear. And also there's the bit of, there's something attached to it that's like, it's really morbid or it's really depressing or it's really, you know, there's that kind of categorization where you're like, well, why, I'm all right now. Why would I want to do that? Why would I want to go there when I'm okay right now? And so for me, you know, it was a real realization of like, this is like, it's as essential to humans as breathing. You know, we do it anyway. It's whether or not we do it healthily and well in a way that doesn't get stuck in our bodies and cause us to be sick at a later date, isn't it? Because we will hold grief.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I guess one of the things for me is it's helping to change the idea that it's depressing and morbid. And there's a funny, I've held a few grief ceremonies locally and I realized when I'd done the third one in a row that before I went, I got quite excited. Like I had this sort of jittery, excitable feeling. And when I examined that afterwards, I noticed that it was because I always feel great afterwards. You know, like there's just something about having been in a group of people who are showing up with their authentic selves, who are, you know, really releasing and releasing for themselves, but also releasing for the benefit of whoever they, you know, the ripples that come off of them in the way they are in the world. And then afterwards we have this real warmth and like sense of togetherness and connection and depth and belonging and yeah, super powerful. And so yeah, I noticed that and I was like, well, that's grief work. It's not bad at all. It's like you step in, it happens. This for me is how I can do it when it's a healthy way. I can be held and let go, and then it stops, and then you celebrate what you've been able to shift. And sometimes that's a lot, and sometimes it's a little, but it feels like so important.
Yeah, something lifts, something releases, something is freed up,
or something is opened. But then, you know, at least you know it's not still trapped.
Absolutely. And I, you know, it took me a while to really properly notice and then name the beauty and the joy and the heart, that love aspect of grief, of tending grief. And so there is something about for me, like really remembering that when people go, oh, why would I want to do it? It just sounds heavy and kind of miserable. And that it's very different to the tears that come from stuckness, from being in one's wounded place, or which is also the same as depression. Depression and grief are two very different things, and I think people get them muddled up because culturally there are so many depressed people. So depression, even though people don't talk about it, is a very prevalent sickness of our times, because of well, you named a few of them just now when you're talking about COVID-19, what the pandemic and social distancing is bringing is an exaggerated version, an exaggerated reality of what many people are experiencing most of the time. Lost connections. I'm kind of I'm quoting a book. It's actually called Lost Connections, if you haven't read it. Like, that speaks to all of this. Why are we in the mess that we're in? Why are people getting depressed? I don't know that he necessarily talks about grief in there, but anyway, to go back to the heaviness and that, I don't want to go into that place. It's like, that's not what grief is. There's a beauty and a deeply connected, it's connective. And depression, by its very nature, we don't feel connected. So that would be a difference between the two. Grief is very connective, connected, very connected to ourselves and very connected. Like, there's an intimacy with life, there's an intimacy with the beings in our life. And that can be the only real reason why grief is there, is because there's connection to life, there's an intimacy with
Because there's
life.
love.
Yeah, because there's love. And then there's more love that comes when we grieve, when we tend our grief. There's even more because something's freed up, like you said, opened up. Oh, we got more capacity now. I feel more available because something's not suppressing my emotions or my experience of life or my connection to life.
So for someone, I'm asking you this because I know how beautifully and how connected you are to the land and how well you hold ceremony for yourself as well as others. For someone who is thinking about wanting to address their grief or going, okay, there's this thing called grief work, where do you start? Where do you even start? Because I remember a time when I was told to go away and do ceremony, do go and be with yourself and create a ceremony. And I was like, what? And it made me really angry for all the things I have not had in my life, which is basically the skills to know what that even means, or the models or the mentors who know what ceremony means outside of, the recognized religions. So what if someone was wanting to start to look at this, what would they do? Where would they start? Or what does that even look like?
Well, they might want to do something really, really simple. Huh. And yeah, they would, that would be my advice, is like, keep it really, really simple. And if we're not in a social distancing situation, bring a chum. Have someone there with you. Who's got your back. And so I always feel like water is a great, she's a great support, for want of a better word, but she's a great transmuter of grief. So if you can be near or with a body of water, ideally the ocean, because she's, yeah, just, I don't know, is she infinite? I suppose in many ways she is. But anyway, she's pretty massive. And yeah, and Martin Prechtel writes about this in his book, The Smell of Rain on Dust, and there is a particular ceremony of going to the ocean. But if you can't go to the ocean, then a river or a lake or even a pond, it's like, but be in relationship with that water, be in relationship with that land and the other than humans. That for me feels like a really key thing. So even if it's not water, it could be a place on the land where you feel safe. There are particular trees that I go to that I don't know why. I have no idea why. There's a lime tree that I can see here from where I'm sitting. And she just, if I go and visit her at particular times, I can just crack open just by being near her. She's like, she feels like she's holding a kind of a mother energy, or in the way that I would love a mother energy to be holding me. And she, I call her she feels like a she. So that might be a place that I would go to. And I'd be asking her if she was willing to support me and witness me in my grief. And I would want to give thanks to her, and I might leave a gift for her. And I might, set up something very simple in terms of an altar, or how do we create space for ourselves? We can't just ask the other than humans. I mean, the earth can take an awful lot. I mean, look at what she's already taken. But it's my experience from working with the earth directly that she's willing to take, and that she can take the grief and the rage, and the despair and the outrage, all of it. So it could be, maybe asking if it's okay to dig a hole. You dig a hole, you create, where you put your grief into that hole. Could be that simple. But it's really, for me, more than anything, it's about being in relationship and not just assuming that we can just go out there and I'm just going to do this thing. And but like the trees, the plants, the birds, all of those beings, all of those animate ones, I really, really know that they respond. They really get whatever, if we're coming in with a lot of fear and a lot of anger, they will feel that. And that's different from being consciously with one's rage as a grief tending process. I want to be clear about that. If I just go out there and I just start ranting and raving because you've pissed me off, that's a different frequency to I'm in ceremony, I'm feeling this rage and I'm offering, it's in service to life. I'm offering it for healing. If we're holding it with the intention of healing, I feel like the other than humans and the land will support us, massively. It's just, there's a difference. So yeah, those are a few kind of simple things that I would offer.
I love that point about the grief being an offering. It's not a selfish and self-indulgent thing to do. It's actually when we do this, when we release what we're holding that we don't need to hold, when we consciously give it away or transmute it or let it go, whatever, however you want to describe it, it's for the benefit of all beings. And that just, for me, when I heard that for the first time, I felt so relieved and so thankful.
I think so many things can be in service to life if we choose them to be. Our dying can be in so our death can be in service to life fully. Dying and death is another one of those, like, I don't want to talk about it. I don't want to go there. But, again, look at what's happening to many people right now. There's a lot of death happening. I mean, there's a lot of death happening all the time. And then how do we bring it back? A friend of mine's just created a group, Facebook group, called Bringing Death Back to Life. And like that just encapsulates it for me. That's a whole other podcast. It's a topic that's really strong in me right now because I was very sick in April. I don't think it was COVID, but I don't honestly really know, and I'll never know. But I came out of that, and I'm very, I'm heading towards something around dying and death now, which of course includes grief, but I'm sort of coming back to that in service to life thing. You know, how do we acknowledge and honor and feed life so that we can honor and acknowledge and feed death, like both in equal measures? How do we do that? Like, not to just do one without the other, that we, this feels like necessary to do both.
Yeah, wow. Yes. And I was inspired by you actually, as well as Azul Tome, who's also doing a lot of sharing about ways we can tend our grief. And I was inspired to go out and create places in nature that I consciously put stones on top of each other, or laid them out in a circle, or, you know, looked at the beautiful things around me and created a space that for me, for that moment, connected me to the suffering that was going on right now. And the deaths, and the deaths of people who were dying alone, which for me just cuts me deep. I do wonder about where our humanity is when we're allowing people to die alone. I can't understand. So yeah, that was it's been a really beautiful practice to be able to go out on my little walks and just where it feels right to create a little, you could call an altar and a place of connection, so that, and of remembering. And that's been a really nice and simple thing.
I mean, that's so, like you say, so simple. And it's just part of your, maybe not daily, but it's not making it a thing.
The lovely thing is I went back there to one of them, and someone had put empty snail shells on all of the 8 stones that I'd laid on the ground. You know, and I've done them with my kids, and, you know, they've been fun to build, and then and then we've shared about what they're for and what we're remembering while we're doing this, and it doesn't take away any of the joy that we've had in creating them. In fact, absolutely, you know, adds meaning and purpose. So
beautiful. You could say it's probably brought more connection. Like, and just, you know, you're just bringing it in. It's like, we're alive, we're in life, and there's death, and death is part of life, you know. To not, and that's not like, to quote Stephen Jenkinson, I was listening to him last night, we don't need to fetishize death. We don't need to make it a special thing. What we really need to be doing is the kind of thing that you've been doing with your kids, is like bringing it in, bringing death back to life. You know, we're just talking about it, you know, and how, you know, I've been reading again more of Martine Prechtel recently, and just absolutely astounding the way that the Mayans were in relationship with death and birth. That just the seeds of each family, and when someone of that family dies, then those seeds are spread throughout the village, and those seeds are grown into the corn, and then those corns are celebrated. And it's like that person's lineage seeds are giving back to life, and that's their understanding. And there's nothing esoterical about that. There's not, it's like so of the earth, it's so like life affirming and of the natural cycles of life. You know, it's like I can't imagine a more sane healing practice than that, really.
Ah, yes. So rich. So I'm aware of time, because we've had this conversation's meandered through some really deep and amazing stuff, and yet there's so much that we haven't even touched on. So another podcast, I would suggest. But
I'm really happy to do that, because it's probably good for me to talk about this stuff and be asked stuff, you know, as well, because
I love it. I love exploring, you know, these deeper questions, and what does it, you know, what will these things look like in a connected culture, which is after all what we want to be imagining and envisioning in. So there are lots of things that you do, as well as the grief work. And so before we end, I just thought it would be nice to hear a bit about other work that you do, and how, if people want to, people could get involved with or connect with you, or see some of the work that you do.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, grief is, it's massive, but it's also, like, culturally it's massive, but it's also a really small part of, it's a small part of what I do. So the other things, I think most of what I'm doing is I'm working one-to-one with people, especially at the moment, online. Working with a nature-based map of the psyche. You could call it nature-based human development, whereby we're exploring aspects of, or archetypes, let's call them archetypes, of ourselves that are mapped onto, again, a medicine wheel, but we're not using that language, but we've got north, south, east, west, and each of those directions holds a different archetype or different quality or different, and there's two layers, and one layer is facets of wholeness, and the other layer is, how do we put it, sub-personalities. So generally, I'm listening to people and I'm hearing which of those pieces they might want to go and be in process or in ceremony with. And so what I'm inviting is people to go out on the land, generally go out on the land and be in ceremony in a very particular way that's like an enactment of that part of themselves. And often entering into a conversation with that part of themselves. Or it might be claiming a part of themselves, marking, like, how am I going to make it true for me? You know, like a vision quest, how am I going to make it true for me? I'm crossing this threshold because I really want to step into whatever. So that's generally mostly how I'm working. And it's very beautiful, tender, strong, humble work, a privilege for the most part, and there's a deep connection that I'm inviting with the other than humans through the stuff they do out on the land that's solo, that most people haven't had up until that. They might have done a bit of nature connection, but this is going into it in a slightly different way. And then that can easily lead into a vision quest process, although I tend not to call them vision quests so much. I might call them just solo land quests or transitional rites, if it's usually a transitional moment in one's life that we would choose that. I'm moving out of that and I'm moving into something else, the next chapter in my life, but I I may not know what it is yet. I'm pretty clear what it is I want to step into. I want to step into being this kind of person now. So it might be more like that, or it might be, I have no idea, but I know I'm being told, I'm getting the instruction that I need to do this ceremony at this time. And that work, in many ways, I consider that my my true work at this time, because it very much ties in with the dying death work, because there's always a dying that needs to happen in the severance period before the threshold period, which is when you're actually in ceremony. So you're kind of allowing everything that you've known of yourself and how your life has been to die, if you're willing, mm-hmm. you know. And then so that when you pass through that threshold and you go into that liminal place, it's up to the mystery what happens next. And then, you know, 4 days later or whatever, you come back and we'll see. And then it's integration mm-hmm. time. Those ceremonies are probably my absolute favorite in terms of my work, the transitional threshold mm-hmm. work. It's such an extraordinary, such an extraordinary way to be in ceremony mm. with others.
Mm.
Yeah, and then I guess there's the Eight Shields that we spoke about at the beginning. Eight Shields facilitation. You know, Eight Shields is a map whereby I get to practice cultural healing. Which is ultimately what all of this is about. You know, everything I do is with the vision of being co-creating a healthy culture. And we have to kind of create a healthy inner village first in order to co-create a healthy outer village. And so it's like working with the two of those things as much as possible. So sometimes it's very particular to the individual and they're in a village, whoever's showing up for them, and then it could be the whole village all coming together and doing it mm. alongside each other. Both are powerful, you know, both mm-hmm. can be powerful. So
wow.
Yeah.
So how do people find out about you?
My website is naturewisdom.life. I'm also on Facebook, mm-hmm. Nature Wisdom.
I'll put links of this and some of the other things that we've mentioned in the show notes afterwards.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. Thank you for all of the work that you do in the world and how you do it. So from the outside, you know, it just seems how authentically and how with such care I see you do it. Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to this podcast. I hope it inspires you to follow your path of deep connection. I love sharing this information so much, and I'll always share any relevant links in my show notes. If you like the show, please consider supporting it at patreon.com/connectionmatterspodcast. This is where you'll find bonus episodes, giveaways, and behind the scenes content from me, as well as having my huge heartfelt thanks for any support that you can give me. It really helps with the viability of the show. You can get most of what will be on offer for as little as £3 per month. Please also subscribe on whatever app you use by clicking that little subscribe button below. That way you'll get all of the upcoming episodes straight into your device. And please leave a review on iTunes. It's so helpful to our ratings. The music that opens and closes the show is actually by my very own dad, Ray Johnson. Thanks, Dad. And you can hear more of his music at soundcloud.com/visionray.